thing as she had figured where that was, that it would be 45 feet from its lowest point on the Coastal Commission parcel. So I, again, this is a revision and the numbers have been revised. For question number 7, what triggered the original offers to dedicate? Were they a requirement of some permit granted years ago by the Coastal Commission? Why does one easement fix in location while the adjoining easement is floating? I don't know. The easements were established in 1977. I have the documents which show what the easements are. They don't say why they are what they are. So I don't have an answer for that. Question 8, page 14 and 15 of the staff report state that a mutual settlement between Bauer, RCLC, and the Coastal Commission allows for retaining wall on parcel 13. Am I correct in assuming that parcel 13 is the subject parcel? And yes, parcel 13 is the subject parcel. Question 9 says a letter dated from November 14th from RCLC. Page 2 claims that the rainwater collection area is in the middle of the pedestrian easement, yet page 2 of Rao's letter, dated 11/6, states there's a spotted drain parallel to and landward of the trail easement about 15 feet, which is correct. As shown on the site plan and confirmed by Mr. Rao, the drainage improvements would be landward of the trail easement about 15 feet. There are two catch basins that would be located within the trail easement area, one on each of the farthest sides, and those are to pick up and control drainage along the trail. Question 10 is, do we have any evidence to verify the comment made in several letters that the fill was illegally placed on the site? Put another way, was a CDP required at the time that the fill was placed on the subject parcel? The fill placement appears to predate the Coastal Act. The fill was present when the Coastal Commission required the first retaining wall on the parcel adjacent to the south in 1983, and there are no indications by the Coastal Commission that the fill material was regarded as placed illegally at that time. Question 11, what are your comments relative to pages 1 through 3 of the CNPS letter of 11/16? I just want to start by saying that I feel that CNPS has some really good questions. And I do disagree with CNPS regarding their assessment that the botanical survey report by bioconsultant fails to meet DFG protocol. County staff and DFG staff both reviewed the botanical survey report and found it adequate to assess the project. I have been very aware of what DFG protocol is for some time now, and I do look at the botanical survey reports very carefully to make sure they contain all the information that is needed to assess the project. In general, and including the subject report, BioConsultant has been consistent in providing thorough survey reports that follow protocol. In fact, in the spring of this year, staff sent two examples of appropriate botanical surveys to both Caltrans and the County Department of Transportation for assistance in their botanical survey writings. The superior of these two reports was done by BioConsultants. Staff questions why CNPS finds the subject botanical survey report insufficient when on the very same site, CNPS did not question the two-page botanical report for the trail project that was partially constructed this spring. CNPS was on the referral list for that project, and that botanical report is clearly insufficient in terms of meeting the DFG protocol. Regarding the report by BioConsultant, CNPS questions the identification of the common morning glory species by BioConsultant. I did call him about this, and she said that they made that call in consultation with the Department of Fish and Game. Regarding the plant species in question, staff spoke with Kim Fitz, a BioConsultant, who verified that what is being regarded as Northern Coastal Bluff Scrub by CNPS is, in fact, the northern coastal scrub community, as listed in the botanical report, and not a protected community. The botanists considered and ruled out the possibility of the northern coastal bluff scrub community because there's not a predominance of bluff scrub indicator species. For example, only one individual of the species lizard tongue, and I wrote down the Latin name, I'm not even going to try to pronounce it, was present. Lizard's tongue is a prominent indicator of bluff scrub and was not present in enough numbers to legitimize such a distinction. Regarding the silk tassel plant community, Ms. Spitz commented that the area to be impacted with mature silk tassel present is too small to constitute a community. Furthermore, the new DFG alliances came out after the survey occurred, have not yet been adopted by the county, because there's still clarification that's needed from Department of Fish and Game regarding a qualitative analysis of the new alliances specific to our policies in regard to the Coastal Act. I have a really long discussion that goes into a history of my attempts to gain clarification from the Department of Fish and Game, not only on the recent alliances, but also on the global and state distinctions in general, relative to the way that we interpret what is considered rare or protected. I have not received any responses from Fish and Game. I contacted four different people, including Todd Keeler Wolf. And this is, you know, it's been like 7 months that I've been trying to contact them. Let's see. Staff maintains the project still complies with the intent of the Coastal Act and that the project would not impact any rare plant species or rare plant communities. The project would protect the estuary from the ongoing threat of untreated stormwater runoff and sedimentation from failures of placed fill material. The project would provide for a balance of needed development, specifically the retention of existing parking spaces, as parking is a limited commodity in the summer, and would protect the estuary from raw sewage contamination from the existing septic infrastructure, which is evidently is exposed already along the bluff edge, and would protect the trail from imminent failures, which would result in sedimentation into the estuary. The botanical survey report by bioconsultant has been found adequate by county staff and DFG staff. Question number 12. Page 5 of the CNPS letter states there are no native vines that would climb the wall and provide mitigation. What are my comments? I'm aware of a number of native plants that may serve this purpose, including the native blackberry, wild cucumber, and twining honeysuckle. The Coastal Permit Administrator states that it appears that significant community resources and public funds have been expended on the recently constructed trail. Are there any conditions you would recommend to ensure that the trail is reconstructed in kind, including rocks, landscaping, etc., promptly upon completion of construction of the retaining wall? Do you have a method to inventory the existing trail, rock fences, chains, landscaping, etc., to minimize the future debate over replacement in kind? I responded that replacement of the trail is already a requirement of the agreement between Mr. Bauer and RCLC in reference to Bauer Limited Partnership versus Redwood Coastland Conservancy and the Coastal Commission, case number SCUK, CBG, blah, blah, blah. I think you all know which case we're referring to. Inclusion of this requirement as a condition of approval of the CDP would therefore be redundant. If the permit administrator feels that the addition of such a condition would be helpful, I would be happy to add it. I just didn't feel when I made the report that that would be necessary, since it was kind of already covered.
Okay, just to summarize, there were some issues that were raised in the correspondence. I think there were some common themes, you know, regarding is this piecemealing the project for the sake of avoiding, I guess, CEQA would be the would be kind of the summary of the comment, and the staff report addressed that in part. I don't totally agree with the staff report in that the issue of piecemealing just doesn't apply to environmental impact reports. It applies to avoiding people piecemeal projects to avoid environmental impact reports typically. But I think that everything's been laid out in this in terms of what's proposed, what permits have been issued, you know, on the site, what is proposed, and I don't feel that there's any attempt. I think that a legitimate rationale has been put forward as to why this project is being brought forward at this time prior to ultimate redevelopment of the site. There's also discussion in the staff report about protecting existing development, and I realize that in the letters that have come in, that's been debated. There's debate in the letters relative to erosion. Does this reduce erosion or increase erosion? Does it address stormwater? Does it make the situation worse? And the same thing relative to slope stability. The other common theme in the letters is the aesthetics and the view from the park below the site. There have been issues raised regarding the botanical issues and the issue raised whether or not the coastal plan allows for the retaining wall or there is a prohibition on retaining walls. All of those have been addressed, at least at staff's viewpoint. In the staff report, I just wanted to put those out on the table. It's kind of the common issues that have been raised. I will neglected to mention, you know, the last paragraph in my email to Teresa. She did, but I would reiterate that in stating that it appears that significant community resources and public funds have been expended on the recently constructed trail. Are there any conditions that you would recommend to ensure that the trail is reconstructed in kind, including rocks, landscaping, etc., promptly upon completion of the construction of the retaining wall? Do you have a method to inventory the existing trail, including the rocks, the benches, the chains, the landscaping, etc., to minimize future debate over whether or not it's been replaced in kind? So with that, I'll open it up to the applicant for them to give a brief description, you know, of the project and address the issues that have been raised in the different letters, and then specifically I'll be asking about the trail itself, how to protect the trail or how to reconstruct the trail, and what's the time frame for doing that, and what's the applicant's intent for reconstructing the trail. So with that, I'll turn it over to the applicant or applicant's agent.
I'm George Rao. Engineer for the applicant, and I was involved in engineering this project, and Julie Price is one of my planners who has done a lot of the planning issue work on this project. Unfortunately, she was not able to be here today, so I'll have to try and answer some of the questions I've dealt with. I think one of the major issues is whether this was to protect existing development or not, and in my studying this whole process, it appears quite logical to me that we're protecting an existing parking area, and it's more to protect the Surf supermarket and its viability and its location. It's presently occupied in the middle of Wallala. I'm sure everybody who lives in Wallala recognizes that parking in the center part of the town is pretty difficult at times. Even last Wednesday when I was down there for another case, traffic was congested. Parking is quite an issue. So the loss of any parking area is a significant impact to town function. Also, this particular area is in the center of town. People can walk from the store to the post office to various services right close by, so to move the store to another location, which was one of the alternatives we considered. It was really a big problem for the downtown pedestrian-friendly type use. The trail easement has a width of 25 feet, and the occupation of that 25 feet has impacted to some degree the parking already. If we were to move that given 5 feet back, we would lose 20 to 25 additional spaces, which would be a real killer for that whole function of the store. There have been a number of alternatives, sort of the big picture type alternative, which the applicant has discussed with the community as well as with the planning staff, with us, trying to see what the ultimate configuration might be here. One of the allegations is we're going to build this wall so we can put a major new structure or something in case of the wall. That's far from the case. In fact, the logical way of developing this parcel would be to reduce the amount of square footage overall by a slight amount by demolishing some of the buildings and making better use of the area where the buildings are, like the video shop and some of the pharmacy, some of the other buildings. We've studied the patterns of trying to get trucks in and out of the supermarket, studied the patterns of parking, and all of that really lends itself to having one good functional parking lot for the supermarket. And if there's some ancillary uses that might develop over time, that's sort of a bonus, I guess. But those will have to come in as separate permits, and there's certainly no way that another major type of structure could be built on the site and be supported for traffic or parking areas and things like that. I think the applicant's been very transparent in his intents on this project. So I guess a major issue, a valid issue, but in my dealing with the whole project, it's been dealt with up front, and this is the project. The trail obviously has generated a lot of adversarial feelings there, and that's unfortunate. Our design, however, tries to accommodate the use of the trail to a good public use. There's no doubt a real beneficial use of the public on that area. And the drainage that we propose will improve things dramatically from what exists right now. There's a lot of allegations back and forth. The trail did or didn't affect the drainage. And in my opinion, it did affect the drainage adversely. But be that as it may, we've taken the drainage from the existing uses and curtailed those and contained those on the project site outside the trail easement. And we've also made a drainage system along the trail, which actually will serve primarily the trail itself. And those drainage lines that you see on the plan are within the trail easement are primarily to accommodate trail drainage and to protect against erosion onto adjoining properties. Specifically, I'm certain what's going to have to happen is an inventory will have to be made of the trail construction as it now exists whenever we start this wall construction, including a photographic record. And most likely, we'd probably get together with some of the trail people and say, this is our inventory, do you agree, before any construction started. Because as you can imagine, this could be a bone of contention. But the trail will have to be reconstructed almost entirely as the wall is constructed. And the construction period will probably take around 4 months or something of that order, of that length of time. One of the reasons we've selected the precast concrete block wall as a construction medium was to speed that construction along. These components are precast. Their strength is fully before you even bring them on site, so you can be stacked up kind of like Lincoln logs. It should make the construction go faster and make less of an impact both to the trail users and to the surrounding environment, which took you by being able to limit the time of construction. I don't remember your other questions.
It had to do with the trail itself and your time frame for reconstruction of the trail after completion of the retaining wall.
Well, I think the practical thing to do is to reconstruct the trail as the work progresses, because it would have to start probably from the south and work northward, because the most critical area right now is behind the Surf Super, and that's the intent of protecting that particular business. And it depends on whether it goes into one season or two seasons. Part of that will be due to be dependent upon the Coastal Commission's issuance or non-issuance of their permits. If it's all done in one season, which is possible to do, then the trail would be constructed, reconstructed at the end of the first construction season. If it goes into two seasons, I'm sure there'll be part of the trail reconstructed as time permits before the weather hits, and then the remainder of the following construction season. There will be disruptions. In fact, I'm sure there'll be no ability to use the trail area for probably several months during the full construction of this wall because of just the construction equipment on the site, the danger to any pedestrians.
One of the concerns has been the closure of the trail for some period of time, whether it be defined as intermittent in the staff report or, you know, and I think that was 4 months now. I hear you saying that it might be two seasons, however, and I assume if you're starting at the south, would the north portion of that trail still be accessible to the public?
Yeah, because the parking lot will be maintained as long as possible, and as long as the parking lot's accessible for use, and there'd be access to the north part of the trail. From a practical standpoint, it's probably required to construct about a third of the wall, a third to a half at a time, because it involves digging out all of the fill which is there, which has not been engineered, and then beginning to construct the wall. And as the wall is constructed, the fill will be replaced and the drainage system installed, so that it doesn't make a lot of sense to open up the whole thing all at one time. Do you agree with that, John?
I have some comments on that particular subject, Ray, John Bauer. I think that when we looked at the number of cubic yards that are going to be removed and then recompacted on the site, I did just a real gross estimate of what that would equate, and it's about a 25-foot tall by 25-foot wide area, the entire length of the site. Now, to put that material all out at one time on the site would mean a complete loss of the parking, a complete loss of all the trail, and a substantial amount of dirt moving all at one time. So I agree that it needs to be dealt with in kind of phases as we stair-step the wall, build it in and backfill it, and continue to re-excavate as we move north. I don't believe that it's going to be easy for folks to negotiate to the trail from our excavation work specifically because of the hazards, the heavy equipment, and the swinging of excavator booms and those kinds of things that they're going to generate. The trail folks do have a vertical easement through the breakers property, which apparently has not been fully achieved yet. It's in some form of discussion. So the south part of the trail actually has some easement to it, and there's some discussion about a set of steps that's beyond that, I think, on Walla Redwood's property that would allow access to the southern portion of the trail, which is completed, other than the lateral easement. So they have some things to do there, too, to kind of bring that usability up. That section of the trail could be usable by a couple, three different potential means. One is if they get their easement straightened out and get the gates opened back up so they can use that easement to the trail that is granted them, or they renegotiate a new set of steps at the south end of the breakers, or potentially breakers might allow a set of steps off their viewing platform at the north end. It's something that I have briefly discussed with the folks at Breakers Inn, but hasn't been of a positive outcome. That portion of the trail seems to be kind of an island that we're worried about. We want to make sure that we get folks on that as quickly as we can. Clearly, as you understand, in our agreement with the Coastal Commission and RCLC. As a result of our court case, we will reconstruct anything that is legally built by the trail folks according to their sets of plans, of which, excuse me, and I don't have a problem with that at all. So that's actually, no contestant from us at that point. Anything else, George, that Sonia needs to talk about?
Okay, I guess I'd ask is, if the project were approved, how do we ensure that the trail is promptly reconstructed? There seems to be a history of animosity, I guess, and it took longer to build the trail, at least in some of the correspondence, because of some of the legal issues that were going back and forth, and the county, I think, has a duty to see that trail is reconstructed as promptly as possible. And so I'd ask that you give some consideration to how do we ensure that in the event that the permit is approved. So I'll take public comment unless you have anything more, and I will give you the opportunity at the end of public comment then to summarize or respond to any comments as well. So I'm assuming most people want to comment, and so if we could just start at the front row and move back, or maybe the back row, since Britt, you have written on behalf of Environmental Commons and pretty substantial letter. So let's start with that, and then we'll move forward with public comment.
Okay, I'll start by saying my name is Britt Bailey. I'm testifying on behalf of Environmental Commons, a Gowalla-based nonprofit environmental organization whose mission is to preserve our natural areas, protect wildlife, and promote sustainable policies. I'm here today to respectfully request you deny CDP 55-2006 and withdraw it to company mitigated negative declaration. As Director of Environmental Commons, I submitted a 10-page letter on November 5th outlining specific concerns pertaining to this proposed project. Fortunately for all of us here today, I will not be reading this letter. Thank you, Teresa, for supplying it. But I would like to address some specific concerns, particularly those not addressed in the November 8th response memo from the County Project Coordinator, Teresa Bedell, and the November 12th response memo from Julie Price, planner for the agent. To say that this project is convoluted and complex is an understatement. While I do not agree that the projects called phases 1 and 2 should be allowed to be reviewed under separate applications, I am aware that the project coordinator has considered them as such, with the retaining wall being necessary in and of itself to address bluff top erosion as a result of a properly placed fill for a dirt parking lot. First, I'd like to talk about LCP policy 20.500.020. This policy specifically disallows retaining walls unless judged necessary for the protection of existing development, public beaches, or coastal dependent uses. The policy requires that a determination be made that no feasible, less environmentally damaging alternative is available. The policy goes on to state that a deed restriction be required, amongst other things, that disallows the landowner from constructing any bluff or shoreline protective device to protect the permitted project in the event the development becomes subject to damage or other natural hazards in the future. Existing development in this case is considered an unpermitted private dirt parking lot and a public trail with a moving easement. I do not agree with the initial study that the dirt parking lot requires a 285-foot concrete retaining wall. Additionally, the trail has a moving easement, and therefore it too does not require a retaining wall. There has been some question as to whether the trail has a fixed or moving easement, and I was pleased to see that in both responses from Teresa Bedeau and Julie Price that this issue now seems to be resolved, and the easement on this parcel is a moving easement tied to a daily bluff edge. Now for the deed restriction. The staff report states that a deed restriction disallowing a wall is not applicable because all structures are existing with the exception of the retaining wall, and that the proposed wall is the only applicable new development. However, the drainage is also considered new development according to the Coastal Zoning Code, and the septic and stormwater treatment should be considered new development and not routine maintenance activity as stated in the staff report. Contrary to the staff report statement that the upgrade of the septic is exempt from the coastal permit process, under the repair, maintenance, and utility hookup exclusions adopted by the Coastal Commission, permits are required for installation of service to vacant parcels or installation of capacity beyond that needed to serve developments. In that a permit was just granted for the demolition of all existing buildings on the parcel, I think it's safe to say we're talking about a vacant parcel. Additionally, I contend that the septic upgrade is beyond that needed for permitted developments. A grease trap and a stormwater treatment system have been added. Thus, the new development, septic addition, stormwater, and drainage should all be considered new development, resulting in a deed restriction disallowing the wall. Now I'd like to talk about the initial environmental study in CEQA, project segmentation first. Courts have repeatedly rejected the approach of separating project activities for independent CEQA review and required them to be reviewed together where the second activity is a reasonably foreseeable consequence of the first activity. In the case of the proposed project, the retaining wall, stormwater, drainage, and septic, it is obviously tied to future development on the parcel, as well as proposed projects on the Coastal Commission jurisdiction parcel next door. The agent herself in the November 12th response memo admitted that the project segmentation argument lies in the difficulty in determining where one project ends and another begins. I could not agree more. The projects pertaining to this parcel alone are so integrated they should not be independently reviewed. Instead, the projects under phase one and two should be reviewed together through a formal CEQA environmental review and not informally during a pre-application conference as stated by the agent. Even if it were accepted that the project was not being piecemeal, the county would still be required to analyze future phases of the project as likely future cumulative development, and this has not been done. Where an agency fails to gather information and undertake adequate environmental analysis in its initial study, a negative declaration is simply inappropriate. Upon review of CDP 55-2006, it's apparent that fair argument is raised on the basis of substantial evidence that the project may have significant environmental impacts, thus an environmental impact report should be required. CEQA guidelines state that the lead agency should consider substantial adverse effects on a scenic vista, substantial damage to scenic resources, substantial degradation to the existing visual character or quality of the site and its surroundings. Suffice it to say that the proposed retaining wall would have a substantial adverse effect on the scenic vista of Wallala, damage scenic resources, and degrade the existing visual character of our town. While staff offers potential remedies to address the visual and aesthetic impacts of the retaining wall, its mitigations are inadequate to negate the adverse impact the retaining wall would have on Wallala's visual character and scenic vistas from such locations as the Wallala Point Beach, the Wallala Point Park, and while recreating in the wild and scenic portion of the Wallala River. Again, at a minimum, less you in EIR. Finally, phase one of the project constitutes growth inducement in that it would remove obstacles to development of the site. CEQA Guidelines Section 15126.2D states that projects that remove obstacles to development are considered growth inducing and that the secondary effects of that induced growth must be considered in the CEQA analysis. This growth inducement element has not been considered in the project's initial study. The question lies in what obstacles are being removed. For one, the retaining wall is, if it's permitted and built, it would, quote, fix an otherwise moving easement. Mr. Bauer has stated in the Lighthouse Peddler article that the moving Bluff Trail easement will no longer move as the new retaining wall will protect it. A fixed easement allows for greater commercial development as the owner would be allowed to move into the current easement, adding perhaps 20 additional parking spaces and or offices. With that, I will close by saying that I take umbrage with staff response to my letter of concern that to address all 10 pages of concerns in detail would be excessive. Instead, what seems excessive is the proposed and unnecessary 285-foot retaining wall. The public and nonprofit organizations that have spent a great deal of time to respond to this very complicated project. We've all done so as volunteers. We've done so because we have serious concerns regarding the impacts of the retaining wall on our town's environmental centerpiece. Environmental Commons cannot advocate building a retaining wall on an existing natural and stable bluff. It's just not necessary. Its results are not well understood, and it will cause unnecessary substantial harm to our local environment. And again, I strongly urge you to deny CDP 55-2006 and withdraw its negative declaration. Thank you.
Anyone else in the back row?
I probably have something, Ray.
Can I get your name for the record?
My name is Robert Jungling. I have something to say, Ray, but I'm going to deflect for now or defer until I hear more professional input because I'm going to be giving mostly just my layman opinion, and I'm going to do some pleading, okay? So please come back to me later.
Okay, the next row forward.
Can we do this row? Can we do this row here?
It makes no difference to me.
All right. My name is Frank Rillard, and I'm a member of Friends of the Walla River. I'm also a civil engineer. I wrote the letter apparently you read, and I'd like to post this image that I created. It's my attempt at superimposing the wall on the bluff.
Okay. Are you entering that into the record?
Yes.
Okay.
I posed the ball basically on the appearance. I think it's being located too far west. Or locating it west of the bluff at all, I think, is just the wrong thing to do. It will drastically change the appearance of the town of Walla. I've always envisioned it as a little town on a bluff. Building this wall will destroy that appearance. And I got my distances. By the way, I created that image using an aerial photograph, and I used these plans, these elevations, and this plan. And if it's the same plan that I used, this one is, I'm looking at this easement here, and to me, that pretty much defines what's known as the daily bluff edge. And when you scale it, it just scales more than a half a foot to a foot and a half. It's my claim in my letter, this 6 to 17 feet came from scaling this sketch. And like I say, if this westerly edge of the easement is correct, this wall is being located west of the easement. And I just don't think that's appropriate to do that. And by...
Which edge are you referring to? The westerly edge of the easement?
You're showing the easement here.
That's the easterly edge.
Westerly edge is right here, right? It's 25 feet wide, so they've got a line here, right there. And right here, this is where I got the 17 feet. So that's why, that was the basis of my claim, and it looks to me like that was, I interpreted it correctly. Now, if the other claim that keeps seeping forward is somehow the drainage solution to this site depends on building a wall here. I don't see it. If I were to design this site, I would first look at, okay, where can I put the wall? But it doesn't seem like it started that way on this project. And judging by what I see on these plans, they are creating more usable land right here and at the expense of a bluff-top environment. And for all those reasons, eliminating some of the bluff environment and drastically changing the appearance of the town. That is why I posed this wall. And it also seems contrary to the general review requirements of the local LCP, which requires you to, where possible, enhance and restore the environment. They have an opportunity to do that here, and they didn't do it. So that's about all I have to say. Thank you.
Mr. Julak, could you place your image over the image that we have there?
Oh, okay. All right. If I put it up here, that's okay.
Thank you.
And here's what we're... But this image, sorry for the quality of the image, it's rather dark. What I'm showing here is an orange area, which I believe is the area that's being added, that's going to be a new usable area for the applicant. The very white portion is the portion of the wall that we will see. And you see a shaded portion of the wall down here below. That's where they have to excavate. And that's going to be the cause of disrupting most of this bluff. And this is going to be the harmful part. And that's what they have to try to restore the vegetation. And others will speak about that. I won't speak about the revegetating slope. But in my view, the wall is not needed at this location. And that's the key design element to this project, where you locate the wall. And I just question the need to locate it where they are proposing to build it.
I'm here wearing two hats. First of all, I'm here as a messenger. I'm representing John Thompson, a botanist, and Julie Moran, a botanical student, who were not able to be here today. Julie is quite ill. And so they have sent me copies of their letters. And Mr. Hall, would you like hard copies of these?
I've read a letter from Julie. Let me see if I've gotten the one from...
We don't have the letter from John Thompson.
Oh, okay. Then.
He has emailed it, but let me give you this for the record. And briefly, Julie's a botany student. John is a qualified botanist. They both address the issue of the rare morning glory. This is not my area of expertise, so I'm just trying to summarize what they have said. John presents considerable evidence in his letter. They are not convinced that the morning glories out on the project site have been identified correctly, and they would very much like to see more work done on that, because they both have studied that plant, and that is a plant that does seem to require some study in order to be able to tell the difference based on field characteristics, which is what we're trying to do here. Julie Moran also brings up the issue of global climate change, reasonably foreseeable impacts like the ocean level rising and so on. I don't know that she has had the time to really provide the citations needed to back up her reasoning on that, but I think that there are more citations that can be provided. So if you have a copy of her letter, I don't need to give you that. Now, as for the vegetation-related concerns, I do thank Ms. Bedeau for being willing to abandon the idea of the 5-gallon plantings, which really would be more damaging and not particularly beneficial in favor of propagating from locally present plants. That's good. But the fact remains that the planting and the weed control measures for mitigating the environmental damage of this project are still not sufficient to reduce the impacts to a less than significant level. They just aren't. The existing very mature native plants have an ability to help hold the slope, stabilize it, control erosion. There is no way that new plantings can ever do that. Then Ms. Bedeau did not address the impossibility of establishing plantings on that site. You know, this is vertical. You know, how on earth are you going to get things to grow on this vertical slope? This is, you know, something that is very, very hard to do. So we are and I'm speaking as the Native Plant Society here, incidentally, we are very concerned about that being virtually impossible. And trying to plant anything on new fill, compacted fill, it's an alien material to the site. It is very unlikely that anything is going to grow on it except weeds. The weed control measures that have been outlined for this project are very vague. What is needed is constant, ongoing weed control for a period of at least 5 years with monitoring. I have not seen a plan for that, and that is really what is necessary. The weeds are an aesthetic issue. They're a fire hazard. They constitute severe impact to the natural environment. And in terms of aesthetics, the wall would be aesthetically damaging. This is a significant impact under CEQA. It's something that would actually prevent people from enjoying the natural environment around Wallala and the Wallala River. And under CEQA, it's considered significant. The vegetation plans for mitigating those aesthetic impacts are not adequate. And Ms. Bedeau, I have to disagree about the vines. The vines you mentioned would climb, you know, trail up something that they could climb on. If we were talking about a fence or wire or something that they could cling to, that would be one thing. But they can't cling to concrete. There are vines that do, but there are things like English ivy that are weedy. So, you know, I have to disagree about the vines. So we're left with mitigation that really isn't adequate. John Thompson brought up two things that were also in the CNPS letter: the timing of the botanical survey, which he and I both believe is not adequate. He brought up, and I brought up, the wetland survey. There weren't enough details provided about it to know whether the wetlands had been adequately assessed in that survey. John Thompson is a qualified wetland delineator, and so I think he knows more of these peaks. Speaking of the issue of project segmentation, CNPS is concerned about this because we do not see why a project should sacrifice natural resources and sacrifice a project like the Walla Walla Bluff Trail that enhance the natural resources for something that is out of conformance with CEQA. Mr. Rao indicated right here at this meeting that the future development is vague. There's implied future development, but there has been no analysis of it. CNPS believes that an environmental impact report would provide that analysis. So, you know, I hope we'll have an opportunity to give you additional comments because there are things that have been brought up today. I will be talking with more experts, more agency people about some of the claims that have been made. I won't go into them now, but from the evidence that I have seen so far, I still claim that CNPS has to find that the mitigations are not adequate, that there has been project segmentation. Why should we sacrifice natural resources for something that obviously is meant to support unspecified future development? So we would request that the project be denied and that the mitigated negative declaration, which is not capable of mitigating all these impacts, be withdrawn. Thank you.
Okay, let's go then to the second of the last row.
My name is Mary Surrender, and I'm the volunteer project manager for the River Cliffs Land Conservancy for the second phase of the Walla Bluff Trail. And I would first, I hear something to read. I've been passionate about building the trail, and I trust that I would just be able to speak. But I do want to answer some of the, or just make a comment about the questions that you asked, Teresa. I would like to clarify that the offers to dedicate were a condition of the family being able to build the surf market. I would also like to clarify that the retaining wall was a mitigation for the surf